Welcome into another edition of the Dana Victory Podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I am Rick, he is Dan, and Dan, tonight we are joined by a friend of the podcast. And not only is he a friend of the podcast, he's been here a few times, but he's also one of the big bats in the lineup of Team 4, if you'll remember correctly, and that's one Mario Mercurio. Mario, thanks for joining us.
I appreciate you having me back.
Mario, first of all, let's talk about that World Series of Xavier softball, because you, if I understand right, you were really gutting that performance out. You had an injury. What would you do? Get shot up with cortisone and decide to give it a go?
You know, that's a hard thing to pass up the opportunity to get out there and compete, with 11 of your guys against 12 of your other guys. And Coach Mack built that thing up for a good 2 weeks. And I have a torn TFC ligament in my wrist that I really can't recall how I ever did. But nonetheless, I warded up out there, and 25-4 or 25-6 final score there, and be one for the record books. The trophy's sitting right in my office where Coach Maxey did every day.
Dan, I know we had fun covering that event, and we were just talking about how it had grown so much. Mario, has it been fun for you guys as much fun as it's like? Have you felt that growing with the fan base and everything? Because this year we were surprised when we walked out and saw, 50 to 75 or however many people were there watching.
It was really cool. And, two things. One, for our guys to break the summer up is awesome. Those guys, they're in the gym, they're in the weight room. Days can get mundane. For anybody here who's a listener and a Xavier student, former Xavier student, current Xavier student, you can imagine the Xavier campus, June, July, August is very, very quiet. And to give them a new environment and to see something different is always good. They love being put in position to play other sports. I think they always have a little bit of a sense of false confidence about how good they are. For 3 years, I heard how good of a quarterback Ante Jackson was. And one day we put together a quarterback club challenge, a la the old Super Nintendo video game. And reality was really defined. I think Two Holloway won that going away. And Dante, his All-State claims and his Big Ten football offers were really questioned from that point forward.
Well, was Two Holloway a running back? Did he play football in high school?
He did, and again, you never know what to believe. If you listen to Two, he was Deion Sanders on both sides of the ball. I'd probably have to dig up some tapes and some news clippings to see what the truth behind that was. But for our fans, the summer months are quiet for them too, and having them out to Hayden Field. On the field with our guys, we gave away shirts. It'd be something cool that we do want to grow. We talked about having a night game, but of course, sundown in the summer is 9:15. And if our schedule works next year, we talked about maybe doing it on a Sunday and inviting former players back. Samaje came this year, but it's something that I think will be a staple of our program here moving forward. It's something that we definitely appreciate having the live coverage from you guys at.
The one guy whose confidence was definitely not irrational at softball was JP Mercurio. So Mario, the first thing we wanted to hit with you is talk a little bit about the facilities upgrades at Cintas Center and in the and throughout the sort of the athletic department with an emphasis on basketball. Can you walk us through maybe what the philosophy is and what people can expect next year?
It's time. It's really time to kind of address the Cintas Center. It's been an incredible home, but it is, 14, 15 years old. And with the move to the Big East, the spotlight has been on, stepping things up and understanding that, you look last year, you're in the number two RPI conference, a conference where more teams make the NCAA tournament than don't. So to a very real extent, we have to sharpen our saw in every area. The thing I think sometimes people get misguided about is, although those Big East schools are our competition on the floor, they're not necessarily our competition recruiting wise. And if you think about Xavier's physical location, Cincinnati, Ohio, and draw a circle 5 hours out from that east, west, north, south, you're really talking about the thickest density of high major schools in the country. You know, a lot of schools had the luxury. Think of Washington, think of Baylor, think of Oklahoma. If you drew that same 5-hour circle around there, you're going to deal with one or two other schools. Xavier, you know, you're dealing with Ohio State, UC, Purdue, Indiana, Illinois, West Virginia, Pittsburgh, Kentucky, Louisville, DePaul, Marquette, which would be a little bit out of that window, Notre Dame. And if you think about the investment that those schools have made lately, that's what we see as our competition. You know, we call that group of schools the breadbasket, and your site probably illustrates it better than anything, that when a kid is recruited by Xavier, when a kid is considering Xavier, more often than not, he's recruited and considering those schools as well. You know, pick whatever kid you want in that 2016 class, 2017 class. He's going to take an unofficial to Xavier on Saturday afternoon. When he leaves, he might head right to Butler or head 3 miles across the city to UC. And for us, again, all due respect to the Big East schools, it's rare that you'll see us in a recruiting battle with Georgetown, Seton Hall, Providence. You know, that list is going to be more like Michigan, Butler, you know, Indiana. So it's a dense list of schools, but it's also the group of schools that has really shown themselves in this facility battle, the arms race, so to speak. I mean, you think about Kentucky Craft Center, you think about Louisville Yum Center, Thompson Bowling Arena at Tennessee, Mackey Arena at Purdue, Ohio State, brand new practice facility, Illinois. They just went through a new naming, their facility, but brand new basketball arena, brand new practice facility, Notre Dame Joyce Center. Probably the crown jewel of all of them, as crazy as it is West Virginia's facility. I mean, unbelievable detached practice facility, men's and women's. The weight room looks like something you'd see at like an LA spa, and it's a 3-story glass. I mean, incredible. So for us, the long answer to your short question is just that. Cintas Center, the bowl is awesome. The footprint is awesome. We have a lot of things in place that have been important to us. But, you know, if you think about when Derek Brown visited the Cintas Center, when B.J. Raymond visited the Cintas Center, Josh Duncan, a lot of those places that I mentioned, Thompson Bowling, Craft Center, all the different investments hadn't been made. And since the Cintas Center's been open, every one of those schools in that breadbasket has made a multi-million dollar commitment to men's basketball facilities. And there's a lot of them. Again, I didn't mention Butler, Hinkle Fieldhouse, Dayton, Olson Performance Center, Donaher Center. And even as you continue to kind of go down other levels, you know, Bowling Green, where Greg Christopher came from, brand new arena, brand new practice facility, brand new weight room, Wright State, same thing. So we have to kind of take an appraisal of everything and in line with our resources and really develop a plan, which we've been doing over the last 2 years, and now use these next 5 years to really execute that.
All right, Mario. Well, you've sold me on it's time. It's the right time to upgrade. But what are the differences? Let's start with the players. What are the players going to notice? You mentioned trying to recruit these guys. What type of difference are these recruits, are these future Xavier Musketeers going to see?
You know, we kind of have three pieces in motion right now that are happening. The first opened Sunday, and that's a student athlete academic center. The Crawford family, a former Xavier swimmer, and believe me, we've thought about trying to trick some recruits and saying it was Jordan Crawford who made the generous donation, but we'll probably do Kevin and Georgette right and acknowledge it was them. But Kevin was a former Xavier swimmer, who's now a dermatologist, and he was very generous. The former Xavier cafeteria, which is on the second floor, has been converted into a incredible, you know, 8,000, 9,000 square foot academic space that now houses all of our academic staff, computer lab, study rooms. So it's just kind of that one-stop shop. Practice ends at 6. It's freezing cold outside. You know, Redmond Hall and across campus, being late for study hall, you can kind of take the time and just go up one floor. That's done. The next piece to fall, and it's in the permit stages right now, is the weight room that'll be attached to the back of Cintas Center. If you'd ever park illegally in the men's basketball and athletic parking lot right behind our auxiliary gym, that half of that parking lot will basically be the new weight room. Again, 5,000 square feet and 20-foot ceilings, a lot like I mentioned at West Virginia, a lot of glass, natural light. You know, right now, again, I think our footprint's about 2,400 square feet. High ceilings, but, you know, it's landlocked in the basement of the Cintas Center. So it'll have, you know, that pop and pizzazz of a modern, new L.A. fitness-type look. But at the same time, you know, equal to the investment you're actually putting into the building, you're also getting all new equipment, which we've done a good job of updating our equipment, but taking that one swipe and just hitting reset on every single piece, dumbbells, the Stairmasters, the VersaClimbers, will give that an incredibly new feel. And as the area that our current weight room is left vacant, we're going to knock down a wall and combine it with our current training room. So the training room will go from 1,800 square feet to almost 5,000. And, you know, again, the training room can only be so cool for a recruit. So that'll be where you'll just deal with more of the functionality. Dollar after dollar after dollar spent on just what are the highest level machines possible right now that are being used by the NBA, being used by the NHL, NFL, MLB, to give your athletes the best possible chance to stay healthy or when you're injured, recover. And, you know, we've been strategic in Cincinnati. Matt Stainbrook, great example. He got hurt at Seton Hall his junior year, as we all remember. The best machine to rehab in is called an Alter G treadmill. You know, I think they're about $70,000. To this point, we've actually rented time on one at a facility in Hyde Park, which is great. Again, 5-minute ride. So Matt heard of Seton Hall, goes there. We go to Madison Square Garden, beat Marquette in the first round, lose in the second round to Creighton, come home. It's a Saturday. Well, nothing's more important than getting Matt back and ready to go to the NCAA tournament. The place that we rented the machine from is closed. So here we are with 2 days to rehab, and because that machine isn't here, you know, you have to kind of take an alternate route. So, again, as you think about building, you got to also think about stocking and getting one or two of those. The company came out that does a cryogenics treatment that's incredible. You know, that Georgia football just bought 5 of these machines, Brooklyn Nets. And, you know, those are drops in the bucket in terms of the overall scope of the things to put in there. So those three pieces, training room, weight room, and academic center done. Weight room should be done June of next year. Training room, hopefully September of next year. So those are done. I think as you turn the page and say, okay, what's on paper that you're actively fundraising for, you know, film room, there's an area that had been vacated by our student dining, as that's moved out of the building, that we've identified as a great place for a film room. Our locker room, of course, again, done a great job updating it, but as you're sitting there with a 15-year-old room that you basically just continued to put new wrapping paper on, giving that a fresh start. And then the other thing, guys, is like the NCAA has really changed what we can do for our players in terms of nutrition and food. And, you know, it's been publicized with Napier's comments after UConn. The NCAA was quick to react and change those rules. And schools have also been quick to react. And we took a quick swipe, and we have a fuel station, and we have different amenities in place that we did quickly to band-aid that problem. And I think identifying a place, 2,500 square feet, that we can make almost a 24-hour student-athlete cafe, to where if they want to go in there and make a bowl of cereal and get granola bars at 2 a.m., you know, it's available for them. And those are kind of the main things that would touch the team that would make a difference as we talk recruiting and how you walk into Xavier compared to West Virginia, compared to Pitt, compared to Indiana, that, you know, we'd be putting Band-Aids on or just completely hitting reset on.
Mario, let's talk about the experience from the fans' perspective. This is one thing, as a longtime season ticket holder myself and someone who sits in not the premium seats, I think it's fair to say, one of the things that I've really been impressed with Xavier is with what you and the facility staff there and everybody has driven has been improvements to not only the premium options available for the high money donors, but also things that are available. For example, I happen to sit directly below D'Artagnan's deck, which has been a massive upgrade in my game day experience. Being able to have local craft beer during the games is definitely a is added to the allure of the place for me. What other things can we expect to see this year and maybe going forward in the vein of what we've seen in past years with the ribbon boards, the new scoreboard, et cetera?
You know, the reality of the fan side of things is we have looked at every single square foot in that building from the fan perspective and taking a lot of information. One, you know, Brian Hicks, who's our associate athletic director for marketing and external relations, sends out a survey at the end of every year. We read every word that comes in from that. Every crazy idea from what to do with our scoreboard to speaker system to what type of beer to what type of food, you know, that is the first thing we started with as we talked about what are we missing, what do we lack. Part two is, you know, we travel to 12 different arenas a year. You know, I can't tell you how many club lounges and different backdoor rooms that Greg Christopher and I and people on our staff have been kicked out of during shoot arounds as we investigate, you know, what other places are doing. But again, fan perspective from the event level to all the way up to the fifth floor, everything is fair game right now. And I think we're really close to nailing down a plan for all of that. Again, you look at a 4, 5, 6 year rollout. If you're a season ticket holder, hopefully you're getting Xavier Nation magazine in the mail. If not, it's available online. But our last issue really outlined a couple areas that just schematically and theoretically that we want to touch or invent. You know, I think you look at the areas just as we do. You look at the Joseph Lounge, like what opportunities are there to, you know, do you make it bigger? Do you, you know, what can you do to give that the feel of this Madison Square Garden next level type space? You know, you look at the North Wall, which is such a dominant feature in the arena, because obviously, it, you know, it houses our banquet room from the third floor, banquet rooms on the fourth floor. But is there any way to make that more game friendly? You look at the bridge that crosses in front of those areas that, you know, you've seen as we've done standing room only, we put bar stools up there. What's phase two to that? You know, can those be permanent seats? How many can you get up there? We recognize Cintas Center as our main asset. And quite honestly, on campus, in many ways, the front door. You know, I think the numbers last year of having 500,000 people through the Cintas Center over the course of a year, I mean, it tells you that forget just men's basketball games. You're bringing 100,000 people in through graduations. You know, the number of conferences that we have, the concerts, Lauryn Hill games, LeBron game, you know, improving the amenities that we have, again, from ground floor to roof, everything's on the map.
You mentioned the LeBron game, the Lauryn Hill, like the special events and things like that. And then you have Pac-Man coming to Xavier games and sitting courtside and being a fan. And when the Latos were in town, they sat courtside and had season tickets. Mario, how important is it for Cintas to be this destination in Cincinnati and be sort of Cincinnati's arena or team? Like, is that a concerted effort when you're having all these extra things that go into this, or is it something that just kind of fell into place?
A little bit of both. You know, it's funny, I get more questions about Pac-Man than almost anything else, but you know, some of that stuff is just natural. Pac-Man, in the summer months, he's a workout freak, and he's always looking for guys to work out with. He uses our sand pit behind Cintas Center to do different you know, different sand pit workouts that he and a couple trainers have always done. He's befriended our guys. He's befriended our strength coach, our staff. So that's honestly, you, Matt Latos, it's just kind of natural stuff that those guys are gamers. They love watching competition. The winter months are cold and long at Cincinnati, and we appreciate that they've kind of identified us as a good entertainment opportunity. But on the other side of that, you know, Lauryn Hill, which again, an amazing event. In worst of circumstances were different. LeBron James having, you know, the biggest professional basketball brand in Ohio come to the Cintas Center. You know, those are all about, allowing our community to touch those type of events and be a part of it. You know, anybody who was at the Lauryn Hill game will never forget that And if you're a student, it ties into that experience and the 4-year memory you have. And if you're that 7-year-old that is from the west side of town that rolled over to Cintas, and you had, maybe you were a UC fan and you experienced it for the first time to see LeBron. But, you know, it's kind of growing beyond just our basketball brand and really focusing on the brand of our university. And that it's about bringing people together and exposing them to Xavier, regardless of it's Miles Davis making that bucket or LeBron James.
All right, Mario, let's turn to, as you know, on this podcast, we occasionally get access to one of the great basketball minds of our time. You know, it's kind of like Red Auerbach, you know, Phil Jackson, Dr. Jack Ramsey, and of course, Brian Snow. And Snow said last year going into the season, made numerous claims, and actually, in fairness to Snow, Rick and I as well, we're a little bit skeptical of the non-conference schedule last year. And I think it would be, while the strength of the Big East certainly played a massive role in Xavier's really strong computer rankings last year, certainly the non-conference schedule that you guys assembled was very good. 27th non-conference in the RPI, 115 KenPom. Why did you feel so confident about that non-conference schedule going into last season? And did it work out? I have to assume it worked out probably a little bit better than you expected, but you definitely expected it to be better than, say, we did. So what was sort of your philosophy, and what were the things that you were looking for? You don't have to get too specific. I don't want you to give away your secrets, but why you thought that putting together that schedule would lead to the level of success X had?
You know, first I want to talk about this guy, Brian Snow, because we had a very clear side bet. And all I asked of him was to acknowledge for once in his life publicly on Twitter that he was wrong. And I see him getting so many battles with people on Twitter and swinging his own little personal sword out there. And as you guys know, he's an expert in damn near every area as you search through his Twitter timeline. I said, hey, Snow, I bet you that Xavier's 14-15 non-conference schedule, our strength of schedule will be better than 13-14. And of course, he told me many times in his ways that he loves to do it that I was wrong. And I said, here's the thing. All I need you to do when I'm right is just tweet out there, Mario was right, I was wrong. And I'm still waiting on that. And you know, I hope one day before all is said and done that I get that. But, you know, I guess here's the thing. That I knew, our staff knew, that Stephen F. Austin, Murray State, Long Beach State were big, big time teams. And I think you guys knew that as well. But like Stephen F. Austin, I think they wound up 34, 35, Murray State top 50, Long Beach State actually finished a little higher than we probably thought. But, you know, they took on a lot of losses in their non-conference schedule as well. I thought Alabama would be good. I thought Missouri would probably be better than they were. Auburn, if you remember, went on an insane late run, and their RPI vaulted as they kind of finished up their SEC tournament. You know, we had Florida Gulf Coast, who everybody knows their history, and they actually finished, I think, 150, 160, which if you would ask me to put pen to paper, I would have thought they would have been a top 100 team as well. And then Jack Murphy, who's an Arizona, Memphis guy, who's at Northern Arizona now, they wound up finishing, you know, in the low hundreds as well. So it kind of, end of the day, the number was probably what we thought in that range. Like, I thought we were putting together a top 30, 40-ish non-conference schedule, and it was probably non-traditional from Xavier standpoints, because you've seen non-conference schedules that have had that number with names like Duke, with names like Florida, with names like Gonzaga. But we also had, you know, the Wooden Legacy event, which as you looked at the field from afar, you said, man, that isn't a great field. But we went out there and played three games that are considered neutral site games in the RPI. One was in the 70s, and then the other two were like, you know, 110, 160. So you're getting a neutral site point for that, rather than if you're playing those teams at home, you're only getting a, you know, 0.6. It worked out right about what we thought. I knew, I laughed a little bit because I knew that the names would throw people off. And I don't think we were, we're not patting ourselves too much on the back thinking that we outsmarted the world. But we just looked at our guarantee games and said, who are the best teams we can play? You know, you obviously can't usually buy top 50, top 70 teams, but what are those teams 70 to 150 that we can buy? And damn near everyone we bought was that. You know, the two teams we played in the SEC. A lot of people pointed out preseason were picked last and second to last. I'm sorry, three teams as you look at Auburn as well. Auburn, Alabama, and Missouri. But again, even the last place team in the SEC, second last team in the SEC, like they're going to be 110. They're gonna be 120. So it definitely worked out. It was good. You know, getting a lot of those, but you know, your bye games are obviously all at home, which, you know, Xavier, our good friends at RPIRatings.com updated their home court database, and you know, we moved up to fifth this year, the fifth winningest home court in the country. You know, that has always kind of been a great equalizer for us with those home games, and it helps your RPI a lot, obviously, and then your sync schedule when those are the wins. So
looking at this year's schedule, okay, so two questions, not really related in any way, but I'll just ask them both so I don't forget them. The first one is a lot of local teams on the schedule, Wright State, in addition, obviously, to UC, but Wright State, NKU, even Western, I guess you could consider relatively local. Was that a conscious choice, or were those just the teams that kind of were available? And the second question is, it seems to me that you've got a lot of teams on this schedule, and I'm particularly looking at Michigan, at Mizzou, at Auburn, and maybe even Wake Forest, I guess, that seem like teams that ought to be that had maybe bad seasons last year, but have a real bounce back potential. And I guess the second question is that something you look at? Is it like a stock market thing where you say whose RPI was kind of, or KenPom was depressed last year that might bounce back this year for whatever factors?
You know, first talking about the local teams, it's funny, at one point, and you know, I share this with you guys, maybe I shouldn't, but at one point we almost hit Eastern Kentucky on the schedule, and I looked down at my little Adobe Illustrator sheet where I have my 10-year map of schedules, and I saw Northern Kentucky, Western Kentucky, and Eastern Kentucky, and I said, oh my God, like people are gonna think that I had a bet with somebody, and this is a sick joke. But you know, we didn't try to deliberately stay local, but here's the thing, like, we want the Cintas-centered environment to be awesome. You know, if Wright State can bring 900 people down, if Northern Kentucky can bring 1,000 people over, Western Kentucky, obviously a great brand.
If Northern Kentucky could bring 1,000 people, they'd love to get it at their own games.
No question. But you understand my point. If it drums up that local interest, if there's alumni in the area that just say, you know what, I'm gonna make that quick trip, it's a little bit of a bonus. Again, I do think all of those teams, although, you know, in somewhat rebuilding phases, I think they'll have the opportunity to be a top 100 to 200 RPI team. Same with Miami, Ohio. I mean, how many times have we played Miami and you watch their non-conference and they're 3-9, 4-8, and you look at them at the end of the year and they have 78 RPI and they're in another MAC tournament final and heading to the NCAA tournament. And, you know, you look at the head coaches of each of those schools, all have done a really good job. John Brandon at NKU, obviously first year guy who's been in Alabama that's close with our staff. I think those will be really good games. Your point about the high majors, here's a couple things to consider. One, we do it so far out that it's, you know, I'd be lying to you if I said there's a super method to our madness. Like, man, I'm looking in the crystal ball. Years, you know, 2016-17, they're going to be really on the rise. When we scheduled the Missouri series, Frank Haith was the head coach. You know, the Auburn series, we knew Bruce Pearl was going to be there. And I think if he did have a crystal ball, I think we'd all look at it the same way and say, that Bruce Pearl team in year two is going to be really good coming back to Cintas Center. And I do, you know, I'm not going to make another Brian Snow level prediction here and say they'll be 10-1 when they come into Cintas Center on, you know, whatever that is, Saturday, December 19th. But I think there'll be a team that you're looking at a top 50, 70 RPI team coming here to your home court. And again, Wake in the Michigan game aren't necessarily games that we year in, year out choose. You know, our Wake series is structured, you know, it was released a while ago where we're going to go two on, two off, two on, two off. And then, you know, the Michigan game is obviously a part of a dual conference event that we're at the mercy of however the wheel, you know, wherever the wheel stops and they spit out what team you're playing. And, you know, the Wake series, as I mentioned, the way we're staggering it, unlike the A-10, and we said this all 3 years, we're now down to basically nine scheduled non-conference games. And the one thing we've really realized is you're going to play guarantee games. That is a reality. Everybody plays them. I know that, believe me, I get the comments and the emails where they say, well, you know, why can't we play 9 high major home and homes or, you know, every elite, you know, exempt event from an aircraft carrier to Cuba to, you know, all the awesome ideas that are out there, places to play. But we have bills to play. We have bills to pay. You want to take the advantage, take advantage of being able to buy a team and have it come to you. You're staying on campus. You're not missing class. Like, that is reality. So 4 to 5 of those spots, of those 9 spots, are going to be games here in our home court that are going to be buys. But we looked and said, man, that's leaving you with, again, 4 or 5 spots for those high majors. We had UC every single year. And then at one point we had Wake every year. And I think what was helpful with staggering Wake, although, again, incredible appreciation for the series as an honor, Skip Prosser, but it allows you to mix in, and okay, we're going to play Wake this year and next year, and then we'll start a series with, you know, whatever the BCS team you want to throw in there, Baylor, Washington, you know, and it gets a little variety and it keeps things from becoming stale. In the Big East, Big Ten arrangements, the same way, whatever it is, 8 or 10 years, we, somewhere on my map, I have what years are off in that arrangement. So it'll be back-to-back years. It allows us to easily pop in, you know, let's say we go Michigan at home, or I'm sorry, Michigan at Michigan this year. Who do you want at home next year? Boring, you name it. Ohio State or Ohio State. There we go. Ohio State next year. And then, again, theoretically, we take those next 2 years off and sprinkle in an SEC series, a Big 12 series, and then back on with the Big 12 or with the Big 10 series. So it's achieving a little bit of variety with, you know, very tight constraints basically on what we have the ability to do.
Dan, you got anything else on the schedule before I move on to a couple quick jersey things?
I guess another thing that's interesting this year is the exempt event and the possibility of playing Dayton, which is kind
are they in that event?
There, it's been discussed a little bit. Yeah. So, but I think the bigger thing is you get a game with Alabama. Team X has obviously beaten the last 2 years, but a team that's been kind of on the rise, and now, you know, regime change there. We'll see how things go. But then, you know, the semifinal game, potential game, if X can advance, would be Wichita State, which is again a series that people I think have been kind of clamoring for around the Xavier fan corners of the internet. Which aren't corners of the internet you want to go into necessarily, but a lot, that's a series that people have talked about, and then potentially Notre Dame as well. So some teams there that Notre Dame could be, Dayton could be right. It could be Wichita. I mean, there's a lot of exciting matchups in that tournament.
It is awesome. It is an awesome field. You know, we really developed a great relationship with ESPN while we were in the A-10. They were obviously, and it was to a much smaller scale than what we have now with Fox, but they were the TV partner. And Pete Derzis, Nick Dawson, guys there have always been so friendly with Xavier and have really allowed us to enter this rotation with them of exempt events. And, you know, again, like we talked about, a lot of these fields, you know, there's a part of this that's unreleased, but I have a really good idea almost through 2020 where we'll be. Now, when you look at the names of those teams in your 2019 exempt events, you know, those are going to be rosters made up of kids right now that are in the 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade, that have no idea what school they're even going to consider going to for high school, you know. So there's a little bit of a leap of faith with the field. Sometimes it works out and it's an incredible field like you see with Atlantis. Other times on paper, it's a field like last year's Anaheim event that doesn't get you super excited, again, on paper leading up to it. But I think as you look at the model of the ESPN-produced event events, you're going to go to a neutral site and you're going to have an opportunity to play three top 150 games. And the hope is always to win more than you lose. And the real hope is to win all three. We struggled with that a little bit over the last couple of years. But even in our struggles, if you think about it, the years that we got, you know, we ultimately wound up getting that large burst to the NCAA tournament. So there's risk-reward, but having the faith and just the strength in those fields. And this year is a great example of that. All the scenarios you took us through there. You know, if you start out playing Alabama, you advance to play Wichita State in the finals. And Brian, you didn't acknowledge that Dayton had an option to get there. I think you said it was going to be Notre Dame. But if you go with those three teams, I mean, power conference teams, you know, obviously Wichita State, not necessarily power conference on paper, but they're going to have an extreme power conference RPI, strength schedule, and power numbers. It gives you an opportunity over 4 days to really start building and padding that resume.
All right. I have two things quickly on the jersey. One's just generally, you know, you always come on here. You give us some type of nugget, something good about the jersey, the Nike relationship. What's next in that deal? What do you have for us this time?
You know, this year's updates, I would tell you, don't necessarily impact men's basketball as much as maybe the last couple of years I shared with you guys. Two big things for Nike and Xavier. One is, and it was announced, our all-school deal with Nike. You know, we're not the only school that has made the jump up to the Big East. You know, men's soccer, you know, we're not the only sport that has made that jump, obviously. Men's soccer, tennis, track and field, you know, they are all under the same pressure to recruit. They step their game up as they get on a little bit more competitive battlefield athletically and working hard with Nike to kind of turn what was originally just a men's basketball only deal into an all-school, all-sport deal. It was something really important, I think, to all of us. When you go to those big football school Saturday games, you look around and it's like everybody's got the same red shirt on, the same Nike swoosh. Everybody looks the same. You know, just having that consistency and brand is really, really important. And I think that's a huge first step to it. You know, the number font on the soccer team is going to be the same one as the basketball team. You know, the X logo on the baseball uniform is going to be the same one as the volleyball uniform. And what that ties into is part two, which is the retail end, which I love you, Rick, but I don't think you'll be wearing many Xavier jerseys. So as excited as you are about hearing that, you know, we're getting a new stripe on our black jersey, I think the bigger news for you would be that, you know, Nike Golf, you know, the pro combat stuff, all of that should continue to have an upward trajectory. We have an incredible new bookstore. If you haven't been on campus, you know, I don't know what the web presence of it is, if it matches what they have in stock, but it's awesome. I mean, it has the feel of that SEC bookstore where it's Nike rack, Nike rack, Nike rack, jersey hats. And I think the retail side of things will continue to be better than ever. Specific to men's basketball, again, we had a daily rapport with those guys at Nike to continue to push us in the right direction. Nike, I don't want to say they're at all de-emphasizing their efforts for teams, but a huge acquisition for them on the basketball front has been the entire NBA. 2 years ago, 3 years ago, they acquired the NFL. Next year will be Adidas' final year as, you know, the NBA official jersey equipment provider, and then it'll shift to Nike. And what we've really seen is the pro combat, the underlayers, the socks, the technology has changed. And I think it's basically as a response to that NBA deal. When Nike took over NFL, the thing that they told equipment managers was that our college basketball teams are better padded than your NFL football players. The pro combat padding on the hips and knees and the tight undershirts that Jalen loves to wear with the pads up the good cages. The NFL teams who were at the time Reebok weren't even close to protect it in the same way our guys were. So as they now do the same thing taking over for Adidas, they're just more technology focused this year. I mean, some of the things I've seen in terms of new pads that actually have socks built into them, I mean, are all brand new products that our guys are losing their minds over. But this will be a quiet year from the cosmetic side of things. Thank you, guys, our uniform. this should be our last year in our current look. But, you know, I don't know how far we'd really depart from that model, that short, that look, even as we re-examine what that next phase will be. And a lot of people miss Throwback Night. The program we used to get our throwback stuff from has dramatically changed, and we're kind of reworking back in a way to kind of get that into the system. But I think it'll be a quiet year for our guys and our team on the court in terms of the fashion. But I do think that the fans and the other teams of Xavier will reap some major benefits.
Sounds like I don't need to update my Mark Lyons jersey then. And other than that, this question is completely for me. I really don't care about the listeners right now. They're just going to have to suffer through this part. Last year, I was hoping you could shed some light on how the Nike contracts work with regards to the postseason. Like, for instance, when you made your run last year, you guys had a bunch of great video behind the scenes provided by our guy Cliff Jenkins, and he had a lot of footage of the guys in those slick Nike travel suits that I was just gushing over on Twitter. I was wondering how does that all work? Is it like, does Nike only design that for certain teams? Do they design one look for all their teams of a certain level of contract? How do they handle the postseason there?
You know, honestly, it's funny. I filled the form out this week. They send a roster form at the beginning of the year, and you put everybody's name on it, everybody's size of everything you possibly wear, shoe size, and head to toe. And if you're fortunate enough to have your name called on Selection Sunday, it just kicks in, and you really don't know what's going to show up. You know, their main priority is tying what we wear into retail. So I can't remember the name of the shoe last year. I'm sure our guys could off the top of their head, but they're firing at us. Every colorway of that shoe that they're pushing at retail at that time, they're firing at us. The retail tack-on shirt that they made available that I can't remember what the theme was, but we wore it for the Arizona game in place for all warm-ups. And, you know, on their end, it's a very calculated effort. On our end, it's a, you know, it's a great benefit to give those guys. It's their favorite benefit is gear, and obviously an important part of the big picture of college athletics.
All right.
I'm just glad that unlike other shoe companies we could name, Xavier doesn't just get outfitted in the worst possible uniforms for the NCAA tournament. Like, I throwing some things out there that are completely random and have nothing to do with reality, but things that look like lingerie or things that have a giant wide stripe in the middle of the uniform for no discernible reason. I'm glad that Xavier has been kept far, far away from those particular innovations.
Are you talking about Russell, Dan? Are you taking shots at Russell? Is that Russell shade I'm hearing?
You can interpret that however you want, but I don't know. There's three straps involved. Let's just say that.
You know, there are a lot of players in the market, some newer than others, but the reality is, you know, 2014, Nike had 96% market share when it came to basketball. And, you know, for Xavier not having a football team that serves as your kind of marketing arm for September, October, November, you know, for us to align ourselves with something like Nike, where it's you're constantly exposed to Nike USA basketball, Tiger Woods for better or for worse, you know, Roy McIlroy,
Roger soccer, Federer,
you know, soccer, you know, everywhere you look, every NFL team, soon to be every NBA team. Now, when you look at Tiger Woods, do you think Xavier? You don't. But if you're a recruit and you see Nike and Xavier together, you know, that only reinforces just who you're aligned with. And, you know, just from a technology standpoint, again, the intricacies of the fashion, believe me, I'm not sitting here planning out where stripes go and stuff like that, but Nike has always had that it factor. And I know sometimes people, their system of dress and all the things they've rolled out are sometimes received in the same light that you mentioned, the other stuff. And depending on age demographics, some people like different things. Others, you know, think they're a total violation of every fashion principle in the world. But our guys, the demographic of kid we are trying to get to come to Xavier, love what Nike offers. I go back to what I started saying here, 97% market share. So for us, you know, a lot of faith in what they have, and usually when it comes and you open that box, it's something that our cats enjoy.
Mario, you've been incredibly generous with your time. This is by far the longest podcast we've done with an interview subject, but that's because you have so much good stuff to tell us. We really appreciate you joining us, man.
Always happy to talk to you guys, and I look forward to doing it again.
All right. For Mario Mercurio and Dan, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.